So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable, Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher with you here at Wrestling Weekly. And Les Thatcher, my contractual friend.
What?
I got a new microphone this week.
Good. I'm glad to, I'm glad to hear that.
Do I sound better?
I'm choked up with emotion, as you can tell, because you've got a new microphone.
I am too.
Well, good. I'm this will be an emotional show.
It's a cheap microphone. But
hey, speaking of emotional, TNA was smoking coming out of the gate last Thursday night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I thought it was a great idea to pick up Chris and Joe in progress because they were already into it. They were fired up. I thought it was a good show overall. You know, maybe they gave away too much to store a little. I don't know. You know, come see. One thing I wouldn't have done, I wouldn't have sacrificed Shelley and Eric Young to Sting, and that's no disrespect to anybody, but. Those two guys are kind of separating themselves in the pack with characters, along with their in-ring work, and just for the sake of the good bumps, I just, you know, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I would have probably put my good friend Shark Boy in that position.
Well, you know what? While we're talking about this, understand, you know, there are guys in our business, or there were guys in our business, who worked in different places on the card, but they were, I don't know, it's like specialists on the special teams or the kickoff teams in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
A lot of guys don't play those positions,
right?
You know? And so anyway, or play them well, I should say. And a lot of people play them, but not necessarily well. But, you know, there was always a guy in the middle of the card in most territories, heels and baby faces, who... Would if you were a new babyface coming in and working your way up and you got to this guy, you might have a couple, that might be the first place where you're going to have a couple return matches, you know.
Yeah.
But then finally you slip by him, he puts you over. But then he gets his steam back down the card with some wins, and he's there for the next guy he has to set up for that. But see, there's a talent to that too. Right, without losing, still maintaining some steam yourself, you know.
Right, right.
And that's a talent. I mean, it really is. And a lot of guys, there have been guys made a hell of a living doing that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked to Chris Jericho one time, and I said, a guy like, you know, we were with somebody else on the show had said something about, well, you know, he was used as a champion, and he was down lower on the card, and he was in this. And I said, you know, you realize how valuable that is, you know, that he can perform and produce for them wherever they want him. You know, that's like a utility ball player in baseball that hits 300 and drives in 100 runs, man, and can play all the infield positions.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you better sign this guy to a big fat contract, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's, you know... So when I talk about this, I don't mean that somebody of a lesser light necessarily, but somebody, you know, but the point is these guys are breaking out, you know, and I would have preferred to see them get a win of some sort, you know, and yes, there would have been other guys that, you know, and when I say sacrifice, it wasn't necessarily that, but it's just, you know, it's kind of guilt by association, right?
Mm-hmm.
So had they have got in some offense, boom, boom, boom. You know, it might have been a little bit different, too, but that wasn't the case. So,
no, it absolutely wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. See, and
But good but, show and, but, and a good rating.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was happy for him. And we'll have Brother Devon on later, and I'm sure he was happy, too.
I'm sure he was, and he's got a big He's got a big pay-per-view match coming up this Sunday. He's going to be talking about that. We've also got Colt Cabana on the program.
The Vampa Savannah. No, that's somebody else. I was going to say the Vampa Savannah. That's who.
No, Colt Cabana.
I know who Colt Cabana is.
Is America's number one freelance wrestler.
He is, huh?
Yes, he is.
Well, if you say so. No, I like Colt. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, hey, listen.
Yeah.
God struck.
Yes, he did.
On Monday night in Raw.
Absolutely.
Whatever. I understand people that are offended, but I've been around the wrestling business so long, it doesn't, you know, I'm not necessarily offended by it. Katie Vick, I was offended by, you know, this, not necessarily offensive, but it's camp, it's sophomoric, it's kind of like Saturday Night Live meets Saturday Night Main Event.
Right.
You know, and I a little bit of that goes a long way, I think. And I think what I saw Monday night was too much of that. Now, let me say, that being said, I also believe that some of these people are fitting into the roles that they weren't comfortable with a while back. I'm playing catch-up, as you know. I was out of town over the weekend, and I had to fly to a business meeting. And, well, you know, nobody wants to hear all that. But anyway, up till last night, I was pretty much on the move. Anyway, so I'm just catching up, and I've been watching SmackDown from last Friday. And I Booker and his lovely lady, she's a good talker anyway, one of the best female talkers in the business. And he and Charmel are, you know, like doing the king and queen thing.
Right.
It was entertaining. Now, here's the other thing, Doc. I don't care who it is. You know, Jerry Lewis, Evan Costello, or one of my fellow wrestlers. No matter how funny you may be, you're only funny for a certain period of time.
Right.
And there are no Jerry Lewis's in this group that I'm aware of. So what I'm going to say is the timing element matters there as well as it does with the wrestling. You know, you can take you've got the people in your palm and your hand at a certain point, and then you shut it down and get out of there while you're ahead of the game, right? But if you take it 10 seconds sometimes or 30 seconds past that, you're on the other side of the curve and you've lost them.
Yeah.
You don't leave them with that high that you're looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because like building a match, you're building to a crescendo, to a climax, right? And your promo should be doing the same thing. And so, that's different with each and every person. But now I thought Trish and Mickie James, they both play the other one to a T. And to a degree, there seems to have been more thought put into that particular angle than some of the ones for the guys, which I guess I shouldn't say it that way. I'll say, oh, he's, you know, gender, right? He's a chauvinist pig. No, it's not that at all. But I'm just saying when you're, you know, I'm comparing it like to the, angle, Ray and that sort of thing, right? I mean, sometimes you wonder, wow, where'd this come from? I mean, I just, like seeing Cena and Triple H and Edge, you know, 3 weeks in a row, and then now you're going to pay to see them.
Right.
Hello? Well, you know, and listen, again, no disrespect to any of those guys, but you're only capable of doing so much. And I know these matches aren't 60-minute classics and aren't meant to be. They're just television. But it's just, you're giving away too much of the store. At some point, you take the edge off of your product. And that's, that's creative judgment. You know, but I just think that you got to leave the people wanting a little something.
And we're going to get into some news right now.
Hey, let's do that.
Let me find it.
Well, why don't you find it? What was it? I was going to mention too. Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. The first news item, this came out this afternoon. A mother is wanting several wrestlers charged with battery after her 17-year-old son attended a wrestling training camp in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Deborah Smith said her son, Versailles Smith, was battered and bruised after attending the training camp. Versailles' mother paid the $75 fee and left to take the other children to Chuck E. Cheese. Now, she said in this interview that the first couple of hours of this training camp consisted of showing your son wrestling moves, and he met the wrestler Austin Aries. Said, however, later during the five-hour session, her son began to sense something was wrong. So he tried to make an excuse to go to the bathroom, but was stopped by a wrestler that followed him. Smith said that some of the workers there took off his shirt, held his hands behind his back, and took turns beating him on the chest as part of an initiation. Smith told his mother that he was screaming for the wrestlers to stop. Then after the slapping stopped, they told him not to tell his parents what had happened. Later that night, he showed his mother he was running a fever. They took him to the hospital, and the hospital suggested that they call the police. Now, this promoter, his name is Frankie DeFalco, for Brew City Wrestling in Wisconsin. He had said that, I'm going to quote him on this. It says, in the first few sessions, we let them know how tough it is. We let them know it's not fake and it's not soft. The first 3 hours of the camp are intense. The trainees learn about conditioning their bodies. They learn some moves, such as falling into the ropes and how to use a forearm to smash into another opponent's chest. He said then at the end, the trainees may participate in this initiation, however, no one is pressured to, and he said that he asked Smith 3 times if he wanted to go through with it, and every time Smith agreed. He also said that Smith took his shirt off by himself. He asked others to hold his hands behind his back because he wanted to show he could take it. And then they were topping him on the chest. Smith was slapped about 5 or 6 times, according to DeFalco, before he stopped it. And he said he stopped it because they were running short on time. DeFalco also denied that they were forcing Smith into the ring. He said he asked one of the wrestlers to follow Smith to the restroom because he looked pale, and DeFalco wanted to make sure he was okay, because in the past, trainees vomited after sessions. You know this, Les.
Oh, shucks. You're ribbon. No, well, you know, listen, first of all, I don't know what happened there. I wasn't there.
Right.
I don't know whether, you know, who's right and who's wrong. Okay? But first of all, he's 17 years old. I never took anybody under the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
I have known places, I won't call them training camps necessarily, but I've taken 12-year-olds. And I just don't think they're emotionally or physically or mentally mature enough for what we do.
Right.
I have had marks. I have had handprints left on my chest as an adult man who worked out and who wrestled 6 nights a week with some guys. Right. Okay. Now, to what degree to run a fever? You know, what kind of shape the kid was? I don't know. You know. But,
well, according to the promoter, he said this kid was really skinny, really pale, looked like he never worked out in his life.
Well, see, he should. You know, here's the other thing. The $75, I mean, the fee for a tryout.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing that I never understood. Excuse me. And I've been training people since 93. You have a guy do a tryout, okay? Okay, Doc, you have never, I'm just grabbing at something here. You have never shot a basketball in your life, right? And the people who run a basketball camp know that.
Mm-hmm.
So now they say, okay, Doc, you're going to pay me to try out and show me what you know.
Right.
Well, I know, I already know what you know, nothing.
Right.
You have never picked up a basketball in your life. Well, here's with wrestling more than baseball or football or basketball or anything else, because those are things you find laying around the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you mess with them, and you might know a little bit about something about them, and never having been taught anything, you know. But in the business, it's a whole different ball game, you know. And but you know, you don't beat somebody. Now I don't, you know. Again, maybe he was just, you know, maybe they only hit 5 or 6. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I don't know. But I have heard stories. Not about this school. I've never heard anything before this particular one. So I'm not pointing my finger there. But I have heard. I've had guys tell me that they have been. In fact, I had a young man ask me one time. He said, "Oh, you don't have chair practice?" I said, "Excuse me. You don't have chair shot practice?" I said, "No, we don't. What are you talking about?"
Oh my God!
And I guess they had. You know, this guy exchanged chair shots with some other unsuspecting soul. That's insane. You know, maybe not quite insane, but it borders. You know, that's silly. Now, when you know, back 40 years ago, 50, you know, back in, during the time I broke in, or even later, they assumed you were not smart to the business. So now I was stretched and jerked around a few nights in a row,
mm-hmm.
To see if I was going to come back before they even would attempt to, you know, let me get one toe in the door, so to speak, right?
Right.
You know, but I understand that. But today, hell, everybody's smart. So, I mean, when I say that, you know, to the degree, it's like you don't have to show prove a guy. Now, when this guy says it's not fake, no. And I tell, when people say, is it fake? And I say, well, you know, something fake is implied it doesn't hurt. So, no, it's not fake.
Right.
You know, people, I mean, like Benoit and Austin out for a year with neck, you know, work. And, man, you know, people, that's silly. It, you know, you don't talk that way. No, it's not fake. It's an extremely hard business. And, yes, it takes a special person to do it. To throw another point in here now, Palmer Cannon, we're told, is on his way home, not sent by the company, coming off the tour in Europe. Why? Nobody knows. Well, you know, if it's because the pressure's gotten to him, you know, I'm up with that. Listen, this is not something every – I don't care. I've had varsity college athletes. I've had professional – or, you know, bodybuilders, power lifters, truck – I mean, dancers, right? Act everybody. Man, it's just, if you haven't done it, you haven't done it. But, no, there's no reason to hammer a kid to prove something. That's now, I run tough practices. I run strict practices, and I push guys cardio-wise and, you know, and in the ring and stuff. But, no, nothing. Now, I've had guys, some of my trainees come to me and say, can I beat the hell out of this guy? No, you can't do that. You know? No, I didn't, you know, I like the testosterone. I mean, you know, in a practice, in a high-level practice, a lot of testosterone, you know.
Right.
And everybody's cranked. And it's like, you know, sometimes in football, you know, guys will get a little, but I've always, no, I've never allowed it to get out of hand. I don't want that. That's, you know, it's great to use that energy, but at some point you got to put a stop to it, you know.
Right.
So, no, is whatever else you may think I am or I am not, I never went through that with anybody.
So that could be a topic for your next column on PW Insider.
Yeah, but and, you know, the funny thing about that, then somebody say, well, is he talking about me? Well, if you got to ask that, I probably am. listen, there's a lot of pretenders out there, my friend.
Yeah.
There are a lot of pretenders. Listen, I got to mention Chicago. I got to say this. My friend Trevor Blanchard on Friday night took my wife and I to the Gale Street Lounge, and this is a community, you know, in the suburbs of Chicago. I'm not even sure where we were, quite frankly. But anyway, man, these were the best dreams I've ever had in my life. The meat did, for real, literally fall off the bone, and we had a good time. You know, we were treated very nicely, and the people there at PCW were very professional, and you know. So anyway, it was. Except for the traffic in Chicago, it was horrendous.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But Doc does love him some ribs.
Yeah, well, this, you know, I've heard that, you know, these are so tender, the meat falls off them. I've heard that over and over, but I never saw it happen until this past Friday night. No, that's true, you know. But it was, you know, we had a nice time up there, and it went well. It went well.
Good.
Yes, of
Good
course
stuff.
It was.
Good stuff.
Yes.
Got to make an announcement.
What?
God is not going to appear on Raw.
Well, see, he's probably booked somewhere, double booked, you know, and found it out. And somewhere else in the galaxy and can't make the second. No, don't.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, see, but there's the point, too. People are talking about it, but not, you know, and see, wow, I don't know. If you hotshot, here's my problem, you know. And they sure got more money to lose and or spend or whatever than I'll ever have. So, you know, what do I know? But at some point when you're playing, can you top this? You obviously cannot.
Yeah.
You know, let's see, again, here, maybe it's a bad announcement, but, you know, tables, you know, we did first went through one, then we went through two, then we went through three. And you still get a pop, but it's not like when you first saw it. 9,000 table shots ago, right?
Right.
So, you know, What can I say?
I've seen him go through four tables.
Well, okay. Congratulations. And it took longer to set him up than the match, you know. And you knew they were setting him up. You said, okay, I think I'll go out and get a Coke.
It's like dominoes.
I'll come back later, and they'll actually have the spot set up. See, those aren't... You got to understand, honestly, the craft, the art of this business is the spontaneity and taking people where you want them to go and, you know, then popping them when you want them to pop. And I don't mean cheap pops and stuff, but I mean sustaining stuff. And that's a talent. I mean, it's a talent more than just flying or looking like you've got muscles or even wrestling on the mat. I mean, there's just so much to it. This is such a complex business, and that's my second class for this.
That's lecture number two.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know.
No, this is good to have on the show. I mean, we got somebody.
Well, you know, Brian Danielson's going to be moving up to around Philly and going to be a trainer for Ring of Honor now, which I think is cool. The guy, you know, my problems with Brian Danielson, he doesn't have a tan, and he's the funny thing. He's got a great personality in the dressing room. You know, he just doesn't project it all that well out in the ring. And, I mean, he's come along with that. But, you know, just a little more personality from him. And I don't mean showbiz necessarily, you know. But, yeah, he's a good, solid hand. And I told him first time I met him, I said, well, hey, man, if Regal says it's all right with me.
Yeah.
And Regal thinks, you know, really likes it because he's high on him. And yeah, he's a damn good performer. So he'll be a good kid, to learn from.
Cool.
Yeah.
As reported earlier, Stacy Keibler will be leaving WWE.
Oh, yeah. Now, I didn't know
that.
That's
bad news.
I mean, I assumed it.
Right.
Right. But,
coming off of the Dancing with the Stars thing, it's just...
Well, she's got to write. I mean, you know, she's got to use it for what... I mean, that's what it's about, you know. It's like these kids in the top 10 and American Idol, right?
Yeah.
They're going to, the kid Ace that got knocked off last night, he's going to do something.
Yeah.
You know, they're all going to do something. That little 17-year-old girl and Taylor, the guy, man, he just blows me away.
Is he doesn't look 29 to me.
Well, you know, but he's got that premature gray hair. But, I mean, but I've seen him tighten his act up and just, and you know, there's another thing. If you're a young wrestler and you're paying attention to this, you compare a lot of things. If you watch the people who sustain on Idol are the people who get better. And when I mean better, you notice their stage presence. They're more comfortable each week.
Right.
You know, you watch them become more comfortable in their own skin. Mm-hmm. And you got to do that in our business, too. You know, we were talking about this over the weekend, but, I mean, literally, not just me, but guys who've been around this long, you can watch a guy... Look at the way his boots are laced, watch the way he stands in a corner, and you know whether he can perform or not before he ever does anything. And when I say that, a lot of people say, yeah, really? But it's true. Because you can analyze his comfort level in the ring. You know, whether this is home, right?
By seeing him lace up his boots?
Huh? Honestly now, the laces after they're tied should be tucked in. Most guys from my era carried a rat tail comb, not out of for vanity's sake, but to use the long, you know, handle of it to poke the strings down into their boots, because the old timers tell you, young man, tuck your laces in, because they didn't want the laces swinging free, poking them at somebody in the eye,
right,
getting caught on something, right, and creating a problem. It's called professionalism, and that's, yeah.
I didn't know about that.
And now you're going to watch, and you're probably going to see some guys that are making six figures a year that don't tuck their laces in anymore. But again, it's a different time. But still, I think a lot of people look at that as just being professional, you know. So yeah, and the way they stand or don't, for that matter, you know, in the corner. No, it's you can tell when a guy's at home in the ring. You know, I would assume that great football players can tell when a guy walks onto a football field, whether he's odd, you know. Well, it's like a lot of guys, Doc, will come into a ring, growing men, right? I've seen guys climb in the ring and just stand there and just shudder. It's, you know, it's their childhood dream, right? It's,
right.
It's a, they fulfill the fantasy. Even if it's just, like when we had the, you know, this is a WWE ring. Whoa. Yeah, okay. This is also my office. This is where I work.
Right.
You know, so it ain't no big deal. But see, that's the difference. you know, and that's what you kind of read.
Can you get over that?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. None of us were born being comfortable. It comes with time. But see, that's the whole thing. And I think it holds true. A lot of people say you're a rookie in this business the first five or six years. And I'd say, yeah, I'm up with that, sure. It's because, again, until you've tried it, you maybe can't totally appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's that complex. But anyway, yeah, and if you'd like to buy my next course, then $4,122.
That's how much it costs to train with Lett. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well,
That's a 6-week training program right there.
Yeah, right, boy. You can get that for me. You'll be my manager, and then I'll cut you in for a piece. Sure.
Ain't it?
Just about 10 guys a week would be cool.
We're going to take a break, guys. We got lots more news to get to. We're going to get to that a little bit later in the show. It's a TNA pay-per-view weekend. So Les and I will be playing the prediction game.
Wow.
And that's,
yeah, stay tuned for that.
That's going to happen. Yeah, that's the fun part. Because everybody in the chat room plays along with us. So
oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. We've got Colt Cabana coming up next. So stick around. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher here on Wrestling Weekly. We'll be right back after this with Colt Cabana here on the show.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Coming up, we got great guest Brother Devon on the way. We're going to play the TNA prediction game right now. From Ring of Honor, it's Colt Cabana, and you've seen him on WWE.
Whoops. Now, see, I was going to say, boy, you know, they say we all have a double in life, and I saw a guy named Chris Guy.
Oh, yeah.
I almost saw him.
Yeah. We saw parts of Chris Guy.
Hey, Colt.
Yeah.
That got more press saying you covered up well than if you got your hand raised.
What's that?
No, on from the WWE thing.
Right.
You know, they were saying, and he covered his face so well.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey.
All the reviews. And no, I'm saying you couldn't have got that much positive press if they'd have held your hand up, if you'd have won the match.
It wasn't me. It was Chris Guy.
Right, exactly. My mistake. All right. Doc, I've known this guy for, what, about 5 years now, huh?
Yeah, just about, I'd say.
Yeah, when the Second City Saints came to work for me at HWA, Ace and...
Yeah, me, Punk, and Ace would trek down to HWA after some Ring of Honor shows or whatnot, and before that, and Les would let us wrestle.
Yes, and they could. They could. You're getting to be quite an international traveler, man. You're working all around the world. Are you enjoying it?
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, you know what? It kind of all started. Well, in 2003, I did a one shot for FWA over in England, and then from there, I kind of got the opportunity to quit my real life job and move over to England for a bit, and that's kind of where it all started. And I got the bug. I loved going. You know, I loved leaving America, and you know, I've been over to England, and now I've got a good thing over in Japan for 01, and. You know, I've done a little Puerto Rico, and I've been to France and Ireland and Germany, and I just, you know, floating around.
Cool, man. That's great.
You played some Division I football, right?
Yeah, I played a year for Western Michigan Broncos over in Kalamazoo.
What position did you play?
I was brought in as an outside defensive end, but they saw how tiny I was compared to all these 6'10" defensive ends, so they moved me to linebacker.
And you played with Matt Capitelli.
Right on, yeah.
What's he like?
Cap, you know, he was probably the nicest guy on that team, to be honest. And it was, you know, he would all. And then when I stopped wrestling, or when I stopped playing football to pursue wrestling, I would see him in the weight room, and he would always ask me, you know, how's wrestling going? And he was telling me he was such a big fan, you know, but. He was a big fan of like the NWO and all that stuff, and I'd always laugh, and you know, because that being wrestling. And then sure enough, you know, I turn on MTV and there he is, and there was no doubt in my mind, because he had such a great work ethic that that he would win that thing. There really wasn't a doubt, so I was looking forward to seeing him in the wrestling business.
Oh, that's cool. So you actually quit football to pursue wrestling?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, you know what? Wrestling is the only thing I've ever wanted to do, and my parents said that, you know, after I was done with college, I can go and pursue wrestling. But, you know, I really put it all on, I wrote it all down, and I said, you know, I can't see myself playing football another 3 years, and that means 3 years without, you know, becoming a professional wrestler. So I stayed in school, but I went and got trained, and it was the greatest decision of my life.
And you did manage to get your degree.
Yeah, I have a marketing degree, a bachelor's in business marketing.
Excellent. Yeah. So you, who did you watch growing up?
I watched everything that I could get my hands on. I really wasn't into, like, the tape trading, you know, scene or anything.
Right.
But, obviously, I was born and raised on WWF. My first show I ever went to saw live was headlined by Hogan and Piper. And the first guy I really remember seeing was Terry Funk coming down with the Brand. And it's really a big image that's always in my head. It was him versus Junkyard Dog. And then, you know, like when I was older, you know, junior high school, ESPN would play a lot of World Class and Global, and at 6 in the morning on Saturday mornings, you know, you'd find USWA or Memphis on, and also Windy City Wrestling was on, you know, that was a local thing. So anything I could watch,
right.
Obviously WCW, you know, was an NWA, so whatever I could watch, I really enjoyed.
Any particular heroes?
And that's the thing I always say, is that I never really had a particular hero. I always thought, and this is my thing, is I just because they were in the ring, they were a lot cooler than me and a lot cooler than everybody else because they were in the wrestling ring and they were wrestlers. You know, everybody
right.
was larger than life. You know, obviously Hulk Hogan was larger than life, but, you know, Barry Horowitz was just as large as Hulk Hogan to me. So
now you're in the ring and you're cooler than me, Colt.
Well, to a 10-year-old Colt Cabana, I am, yes.
Listen, that brings up something I was going to point out, too. And you have been able to successfully do the comedy stuff and still be considered, you know, a kick-ass heel or a babyface or whatever case it happened to be, and you've made it work. Now, I say that because my hat's off to you, because that is a hard gig. I know a lot of guys, especially at the indie level, try it and are totally unsuccessful. They're one or the other or neither. But, I mean, and when I say that, I want the people listening and in the chat room to know that, I mean, that I was talking to Doc earlier about specialists in our business, you know, like special teams in football. And in this regard, I think you're one of the best at that that's going around today.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it, and I really attribute that to I don't do anything too, like, you know, I'm not a Doink the Clown.
Right.
You know, I'm not something crazy. My humor is just my natural humor. And when I'm wrestling, I enjoy myself. And maybe I enjoy myself too much where, you know, I just joke around and it comes off funny to some people. But that doesn't stop me from trying my best in the match and trying to win the match.
You know, a match that I've missed seeing is you and my resident clown, Nigel.
Oh, man.
You know, and I've always heard that, and I thought, yes, I can envision that.
We have two such different senses of humor. At the same time, we definitely both have a sense of humor. So,
yes.
Nigel and I, you know, that was one of my favorite feuds ever, you know, wrestling Nigel, and it was a blast. Just, I think we wrestled 6 months and, you know, worth of matches in Ring of Honor, and it was always, that was one of my most fun programs I was in.
Good.
Yeah.
So you've held some heavyweight titles at various independents, like International Wrestling Cartel, NWA Illinois, IWA Mid-South. How'd you enjoy your time there?
Where, just on the indies? Or?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, hey, listen, I've been freelancing since day one. That's, you know, the things you got to do, and I love the independents. I love going around. It's a lot more relaxed atmosphere. You'll always see me at the gimmick table hawking my stuff, and at the same time, having a joke with the fans. But at the same time, you know, I take my matches very seriously. And it's funny because people don't believe me when I say I take my matches seriously because, you know, I do have such a good time in the ring, but it's still business to me. So I you know, I love doing the independents just as much as I love doing anything else. As long as I'm in a wrestling ring, I'm having a good time.
Let me ask you a question. Last time you and I had a chance to talk in Dayton last year, because you weren't up on the last show, you were in Japan.
Right.
But you and I discussed what path you might take if you were to shift gears and get a little away from like the comedy thing. Have you seriously considered doing that, or is that just something somebody talked to you about, or what?
Well, you know, in the last 8 months with Ring of Honor, Homicide and I have gotten pretty hot and heavy.
Right.
And, you know, for that time, you know, it really got in my head. And, you know, I grew out with a beard, and I didn't really shave, I didn't really cut my hair. And I wasn't joking around, because there's nothing to joke about, because Homicide, you know, was doing some dastardly stuff. And I really put, you know, the comedy and the ha-ha on hold.
Right.
Because nothing at that time was really funny to me. So it worked well. And now, you know, that I know that I have a side like that, in the future, I believe, you know, there's going to be a little more serious to Colt Cabana. But at the same time, less, like I said, if you're not enjoying your job, what's the point? And, you know, I'm paying my bills. I'm living the life that I love to live, and I'm having a good time. So
you're singing to the choir here, baby.
What's that? Yeah.
You're singing to the choir.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I don't see myself becoming, you know, getting dressed in a tuxedo and seconding the $1 Million Man to the ring. You know, but at the same time, you know, I'm gonna enjoy wrestling like I always do.
Somebody told me a story about you. You were teaming up with Ace Steel.
Okay.
I don't remember where this was. Ace Steel's in the ring, and he's got his opponent in a chicken wing. And you're on the turnbuckle yelling, "Ace, I'm glad you're on my team. That looks like it hurts."
Oh. Yeah, doesn't surprise me.
But I just thought that was funny.
But you know what? That's one of the, I mean, but see there again, Doc, that's, he can get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else couldn't. Somebody else could do the same thing, and it wouldn't. It just wouldn't work. They could be handsome or ugly, or it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. It's because it fits him. And again, I'm just impressed when I, because you know, the way he's able to balance it, and that in itself is part of the art, man.
And WWE's took note. I mean, you did some stints with WWE, right?
You know, when they come around town, I'm asked to show up, and they give me a handsome sum to do whatever, and I just do what they want me to do.
Excellent. You faced Vito and Matt Hardy recently on Velocity and Heat.
Right.
What are they like in the ring?
You know, like I said, WWE just, you know, they paid me to show up and do whatever, and I was more than willing to do whatever I could. You know, my hat's off to Matt Hardy, though, because I did meet him in Ring of Honor, and he's a stand-up wrestler, really, and I couldn't put him over anymore. And Vito was a good guy, too.
So, yeah.
I mean, everybody back there, you know what, I did a couple of those a couple of years ago, and it's interesting because now that I'm back there, it seems like I have a lot more friends back there, so it's a lot more comfortable for me, because you know, all these guys that I've grown up in wrestling, and you know, I came in with Ace Steel and Danny Dominion, and they weren't really, you know, recognized. So a lot of the stuff that me and CM Punk have done, we've just kind of done for ourselves. And, you know, we've made friends and branched out and networked really from the start. You know, we weren't trained by Shawn Michaels or Les Thatcher or anybody really. So we just kind of did our own thing. And so it's a lot of these guys, you know, I've met along the way are now in the WWE, and it was a very more relaxed atmosphere with all those guys back then.
Excellent. This is the part of the show now where we take questions from the chat room.
Okay.
And Rhode Island Red says, "I've read on the internet that you say
the internet
on the internet."
I wouldn't believe it, but go on.
It said, "I read on the internet that you say Sean Waltman has told you a lot of good stories. Is this true? And can you repeat any of those?"
Oh, I've said on an interview before that. Like, I'm, you know, obviously a big mark, and I grew up loving wrestling. And,
right.
And sometimes you just want to ask all these guys, you know, because Sean Waltman was around, you know, like, maybe a little, like, not as much in the peak of when I loved it, but he was around when I really loved wrestling. And you want to ask all these guys all these questions because you just want to, you know, the mark of me. You just want to know. But you're not allowed to. You're taught, you know, you can't go up and mark out these guys or whatnot. So Sean Waltman, you know, he was a big partier, so I could just ask him whatever, and he's told me whatever, and then I don't even think he remembers who I am, so like, that was always the fun part, you know what I'm saying? So he's not going to judge me because he's got no clue who I am.
Yeah. Do you have any road stories that include yourself?
Just in general?
Sure.
Okay, well, Doc, you asked me to think of a road story, and
right.
I was going to say, don't ask me about that time in Tijuana. But, like, as a joke, but then I remembered I was in Tijuana. And funny story, it was me, Adam Pierce, this guy Alcatraz, Baby Slim. We all did a show in Tijuana, Mexico. And then we went to the strip clubs afterwards. And it was a fun time, and there's two parts to it. Alcatraz, he told one of the, you know, and Tijuana isn't the hot, you know, the hotbed of North America, so
right.
we went to the gentlemen's clubs afterwards,
uh-huh.
And Alcatraz told one of the strippers that it was Rick Knox, the referee, his birthday, so she brought this little referee onto the stage, and she undressed him in front of everyone, and little Rick Knox had the biggest
right
that I'd ever seen, right, and I'm up taking pictures and like enjoying myself, and then I realized I had a camera in a strip club, and the guy comes over to me, and all of a sudden, you know, I got a feeling he's gonna take my camera or whatnot, and he's like, "You have a camera?" I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry," and then I all of a sudden I'm ready, you know, to get thrown out or get beat or get put deported.
Right.
And he asked me if I'd like to buy cocaine. So I denied that, but that was always a fun part. I thought that.
Wow.
Thank you.
Mr. WrestleMania says, what's your favorite thing to do besides wrestling?
What I love to ride my bike around Chicago in the summertime, and it's just getting nice over here, and I'm on my bike all day just bumming around Michigan Avenue or down the lake or whatever. So,
oh yeah.
That's really my favorite thing to do. And you know, you get a tan and you get to, you know, scope out the women at the same time, so that's my hobby.
Professor VNS wants to know, what was your role at WrestleMania 22?
My role, I was a druid, I guess, right? And, you know, it was it was a fun time to be back there. You know, that's their big show. And I guess, you know, to be invited to be a part of it, you know, was a lot of fun. And that was it. I walked The Undertaker down. And if you watch it again, I'm the guy who has no clue what he's doing holding the torch. I'm turning around, and I'm walking before the other guys walk in, and a couple of people have commented on it, and I think it's kind of funny.
Are you looking at yourself on the big screen?
What you're trying to say is if we're looking for a dance partner, you wouldn't be that guy.
Well, you know, I'm a good dancer, just not a good druid, I guess.
Okay.
Were you nervous backstage? Do you get nervous going backstage to WWE?
Not at all. You know what? It's the I think as I was going out for my first match, I wrestled Eugene, you know, a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's a good or bad thing that I'm not nervous, but, you know, I was getting ready and I was, you know, jumping around. And, you know, I think Victoria asked me if I was nervous, and I was like, no, you know, there's 10,000 people out there, and I was just there doing my job, you know. It's not, you know, but this is my eighth year of wrestling. It's nothing new to me, you know. Whether it's 10,000 or four people, I know what I'm doing, and I enjoy myself, so no nerves, really.
Ooh, B-Mac has a question. He says, are you going to tap when Dragon stretches you out in Ring of Honor coming up?
Wow, why would, you know, and you bring up the point that this Saturday at ROHWrestling.com, Ring of Honor, it's myself against American Dragon, and it's one of the biggest matches of my life because the Ring of Honor Championship is on the line, and it is something that means a lot more to me than a lot of people think or know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say no, I won't be tapping as you stretch me. And I plan on winning the belt and bringing it back to Chicago. And I plan on being the biggest day of my life.
No, I wish you luck on that.
Yeah.
I've got, a couple more questions. Mr. WrestleMania wants to know, what's your favorite place to wrestle at?
Oh, I really loved wrestling Croydon. Fairfield Hall's in England.
Mm-hmm.
Was after watching, you know, watching tapes and seeing Croydon, and then being able to wrestle there because there's so much history there. Corgan Hall was a blast to wrestle at, as the Japanese really seemed to take to me. It's kind of funny because, you know, I don't speak the language. I don't speak their language. They don't speak my language, but I still make them laugh somehow. So, and then in America, you know, around here, I really loved wrestling at the Rexplex in New Jersey. It's upsetting that that's gone. Dayton's always, especially, you know, the way that Dayton treated myself and Nigel that first match we had.
Yeah.
You know, it's really become one of the better places. And then, of course, Chicago Ridge, you know, my hometown.
Oh yeah.
People always, my neighbors are, they come and they support, and it's a great time.
Hutch wants to know, what's the smallest indie you've ever worked for?
Oh, there's been some small ones. I did like 7 people in Scunthorpe, England.
Wow.
8 paid in Indianapolis, Indiana, I think. Yeah, there's been some small ones. So, you know what? And that, you know, it's a challenge to me because I'll take it as a personal challenge. Because, you know, obviously I'll be embarrassed for myself and I'll be embarrassed for the people, you know, that are there. So I take it as a challenge to get those people, you know, as fired up and as into the match as I possibly can. And that's kind of, you know, where you hear the term wrestling psychology is it's a different psychology. You've got to find a way to get those people involved because, you know what, those 8 people, those 7 people paid, you know, £15 or $10 to get in. And I take it as a personal, you know, challenge to get those people involved and enjoy the show and leave and remember, you know, that, hey, you know, I was entertained by Colt Cabana.
Yeah, you know, an old-timer told me one time, a long time ago, he said, you know, kid, you got to work harder in front of 50 people than you do in front of 5,000 because you got to make 50 into 500 and then into 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it, too.
Yeah.
Because it seems like those WWE shows, you know, it's like you do a hip toss and they go ballistic, and then you know in front of 50 people you do a hip toss and you know they're kind of like, you know, you hear the crickets in the corner. So
yeah,
I believe it, Les.
Yeah, you got to work harder.
Another question. Tiger wants to know how many injuries or what kind of injuries you suffered.
Tiger.
Tiger.
Oh, all right.
T-Y-G-E-R.
All right, injuries. I've separated both my AC joints in my shoulders. I've broken my middle finger and my thumb. I've torn my quad. I've torn my MCL a couple times.
Wow.
Lacerated cheek. Broke my nose. Chipped some teeth. I lost a foot and numb.
you're blaming the middle finger on wrestling, too.
Yeah. One last thing. Shockage wants to know if you'll sing the Colt Cabana song. He says he loves that song.
You know what? And I'll be honest. I've been coming out to that song for, it's like 8 years now. I still don't know the words to Copa Cabana. Is that pathetic or what? And everyone sings it along with me, and I have no clue. Like, if you watch, you know, like, when the music's hitting and I come in, like, I'll start singing at the just when the chorus hits. That's
right.
The only part I know, yeah.
Otherwise, your mouth's just moving, and it's
yeah,
not in
right?
sync. Like
I'm
a puppet.
Sorry,
oh, okay. I got another one. Mr. WrestleMania wants to know who
Mr.
thought.
WrestleMania is all about Colt Cabana, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He loves you. He wants to know who thought of the name Chris Guy.
I guess that'd be A Steel's mom, wouldn't it? That's all I could say.
Can you tell us the story behind this whole Chris Guy, Scott Colton thing?
Yeah, you know what? I was over in England, and I was wrestling, you know, 26 shows in 21 days or something, and so I didn't even get to see when, you know, Ace, I guess, was on Raw, and he's getting a haircut by Eric Bischoff or by Eugene or something, and he announced his name is Scott Colton, and for those who don't know, you'll have to figure it out, and so you know I didn't even find out until like 2 weeks afterwards, and. And I thought it was one of the best ribs I ever heard. You know, he used national television to kind of take a poke at me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got Dean Malenko was my agent, he told me I couldn't use Colt Cabana because Carlito's thing on Raw. You know, the Cabana.
Right.
You know, the first name I was going to pick was Chris Guy. So tribute to Ace Steel. You know, I was kind of happy. I rushed right over to Sarge and I was like, my name's Chris Guy tonight. He's like, okay.
What did Ace say when he got wind of this?
He had a chuckle and he said, "Aren't receipts the best?" And then the next night, I wrestled Vito, and you know, they knew me as Chris Guy from the night before, so I was Chris Guy again. So I think if I keep on going back, I'm stuck with Chris Guy.
Oh, that's classic. All right, well, we got to get out of here, and I want to thank you for coming on the show, Cole. It's been a great interview.
Well, hey, I appreciate it, and if I could, you know, I'd always hope everyone checks out ROHWrestling.com, ROHVideos.com, and ColtCabana.com, and just keep on supporting wrestling. We appreciate it.
And you have a MySpace, too. Do you want to push
that? Yeah, MySpace.com/ColtCabana, and I usually respond to everybody except when they talk to me about WWF because I wrestle for Ring of Honor, so.
Awesome.
Like, I've gotten a lot of people are bombarding me with, are you signed with WWE, with WWE, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And, you know, like, I get annoyed with that. So if you want to talk to Ring of Honor, I'll be happy to respond and talk to you. Otherwise, that's it.
Okay.
Hey, Stat, I'll see you in Dayton on the 28th.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye, Cole. Cole Cabana here on WrestlingWeekly.com, guys. We've got Brother Devon coming up, and we're going to play the WrestleMania, or not the WrestleMania, we're going to play the, we're going to play the pay-per-view prediction game coming up in just a little bit. We'll be back right after this with some more news for you on Wrestling Weekly. Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Les, we got some more news to get to, my friend.
Okay. Let's get to it then, Doc. How's that?
That's pretty good.
See?
All right.
Well, I know how to come right back, right?
Yeah, you do. You know how to come back from a break.
Boy, do I ever.
The PW Torch newsletter is reporting that JR spent a lot of time with Joey Styles at WrestleMania this year. Several people noticed that this was the closest they had witnessed JR working with anybody. Styles, like Mike Tenay of TNA, is known for working with a lot of notes. Now, Styles was said to have missed a low blow from Lita in a match between Mick Foley and Edge because he was looking at his notes instead of the action in the ring. Making shorter notes is one of the things that JR has worked with Styles during their time backstage.
You know what? That makes sense. Well, you know, listen, I have been training athletes since, well, I guess, you know, it's got funny, I was thinking this today, at Cauliflower Hour, I'm introducing for induction to the Ring of Friendship, Bill White and Scott Casey.
Mm-hmm.
White, as an opponent I met early, like when he was just green as grass, and mentored him to a certain degree, you know, and then... also, Casey, when he came into the Carolinas as a rookie, Booker said, here, you know, teach him to tag wrestle because he hadn't done that. So, in fact, because of some of my post-match rants or psychology lessons, he'd say, yes, Mother Thatcher, yes, Mother Thatcher.
Right.
But anyway, that's you know, what can I tell you? What can I tell you?
Chris Jericho has signed a deal with Warner Publishing to release his memoirs in 2007. The book is tentatively titled A Lion's Tale, and it's going to focus primarily on the early days from 1990 to 1996.
Yeah.
They're going to take a look at the adventures he experienced, first while training in Western Canada and then while performing in Mexico.
Knoxville.
Japan, Germany, Southern United States.
Yeah.
Knoxville.
Yeah, exactly, for Smokey. That's,
oh, yeah.
We were the first place they worked when they came into the States, Ian Landstorm,
mm-hmm.
as the Thrill Seekers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and,
they were just ahead of the curve.
And they,
I mean,
they roomed with Mustafa.
I say ahead of the curve. Jimmy told me, he said, Les, got these two young guys, good-looking kids, fly all over the place, man. He said, they're going to get red hot here. Did all right, but they didn't get really red hot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sadly enough, it was, you know, they didn't get over like we expected them to. But that was where Jericho busted his arm and worked with it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then had the cast put on later. I'll tell you what, I'm really happy. Chris is a good guy.
I feel fortunate to have lived one dream, you know, and he's been a professional wrestler at the top of his game. He's a rock star, you know, heavy metal star, whatever kind of star you want to call it. Now he's going to write a book. He's doing some movies, some stage acting, which to me is probably far more difficult than movies.
Yeah, he's got a lot of charisma.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he's done a lot, and you know, and I understand if he didn't want to go back to wrestling, it's not like, wow, you know, his plate's so full, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's still a young man, and he's experiencing a lot of things at a high level, you know. I mean, you and I might have picked up a guitar and learned to strum a few bars and play with a garage band, you know, that did a half-baked job at some point. But, I mean, when I say he's served several masters, it's not like it's just at entry level, you know.
Yeah, this guy's multi-talented.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm happy for him, man. He's a good guy.
I am, too, but I miss him. I want to see him back on TV.
Well, okay. Call him and tell him, okay?
Yeah, I'll have to do that. I'll tell his agent.
There you go.
On his MSNBC show Countdown on Monday, Keith Olbermann ripped Vince McMahon for the storyline with God in his Worst Person in the World segment.
Well, I mean, they say it's publicity, right? No matter.
Yes.
Vince
McMahon actually came in third place. So,
then there's two people worse than Vince, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then.
Speaking of Vince, WWE has announced they're going to be releasing a DVD called McMahon on August 22nd. According to WWE.com, this two-disc production takes a look back at what caused Vince McMahon to come out of the announcer booth and right into some of the most controversial moments ever seen on television. It's going to be they're going to be talking to Shane McMahon, Stephanie, Linda, Triple H, Hogan, Kurt Angle, Bischoff, Heyman, and somebody else.
Yeah, who else?
Somebody I know. I can't remember.
Ah, Les Thatcher. Maybe my stuff is too bland and won't make the DVD. So don't say.
Maybe they'll cut it and.
Tuesday here in town, I did tape segments for Pillman, the Pillman DVD, and for the McMahon DVD. I say though, you know, could all get left on the cut. It's like a movie. You know?
You're not guaranteed to be on the DVD.
And I heard the cast of thousands you were talking about. I'm thinking, how do I fit in there, man? You know?
You've got to be on the Pillman DVD, though.
Well, that's a different story, but yeah.
Right.
That was a special thing, man. It really was. That's what we said, too. You know, it's like every year there was just the show had a feel to it. You know, it had its own electricity. And it was great. Well, it lasted, you know, 4 years. And when we did the first one, we never even thought about two, never mind three or four.
Right. On June 9th, in some other news, TNA is going to run their first ever house show in the Northeast at the ECW Arena in Philadelphia. It's called Hardcore War, and it's going to be the first Northeastern endeavor for Hermie Sadler's UWF promotion.
Wow.
Which has been running TNA house shows in the Virginia area.
You know what? This makes the 4,951st promotion to run the ECW arena. That's ECW. I'm obviously being facetious, but I guess except for XPW, everybody's drawn relatively well in there. And when I say that, I that's not my prime focus in life, is to check the box office numbers at the old ECW arena. But there's obviously a reason to be running there. Well, of course, the population of Philadelphia, you know, you've probably got enough people to sell out within walking distance.
Yeah, it's the hardcore mecca, Les.
Okay, we'll see there. Right there, that does it for me.
That's just one reason.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like the Wide Ties are coming back, and they're trying to bring hardcore back.
Yeah, what do you think about TNA running the hardcore show, though, as opposed to what they're doing now?
Well, see, here's the deal, okay? The ECW reunion last year was a big hit, right? And then the one that Shane Douglas ran over at the old ECW arena,
right?
Of all places, right? So now somebody, you know, and now with TNA, who is not necessarily recognized in that vein, or well, I guess of recent times, I guess you could say they were, honestly, to a certain degree. You know, it's gonna. How often is it going to work? see, I think one of the reasons that whole thing burned out, too, was it, we were talking about earlier in the show, things being overdone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, how long can you do that? If you do it all, if you do it every day, every match, it's like ho-hum, you know? And so and again, if these things are money makers, I mean, I'm happy for the boys. They're getting a payday. The promoters aren't going under. That's all. I think that's all good news. You know, it's just that at some point, if everybody does it, then it's going to burn out, and then nobody's going to make any money off of it.
Right.
Right? And that's – but you see, that's not something that just festered into our business today. That's been going on since I've been in this business is – well, no, I mean, people didn't cross boundaries and territories necessarily, but they get a good house out of something or a particular angle would work well, and you beat it over the head until it was dead, right? It wasn't even twitching anymore. And then it's like, you wonder, God, it doesn't draw anymore. Well, no. You know, it's, guys call it greed. I don't know. You call it whatever you like. No, I honestly, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I saw on Abyss the last time Ring of Honor was in Dayton. I was looking at his the scars from the barbed wire stuff, and I said, man, better you than me. I'm not into that. You know, it's just. I don't see the need.
He said he was kind of proud of
it. No, when I say that, he's talented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand why some guys do it, because they aren't. You know, but again, that I mean, because you know, Foley was. See, and that's the other thing too. Foley, if you really studied the craft, what Foley was an artist. You know, Funk's an artist. Again, there was things that I don't remember the match. It's been too many years ago, but it was one of the examples I used to use, and I'll get off my soapbox here in a second. you know, he and Shawn Michaels were in a match, and they were going to use a table, and the table was sitting there up against the security railing, and you go to the indie shows, you see all the time, they pick the table up and carry it where they want to put it, right?
Right.
Okay, well, these guys, in terms of fighting, got between the security rail and the table, and then one of them knocking the other one backwards, it pushed the table up against the apron, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so then they fought away from it, down the apron, away to the other side of the ring, went back in the ring, worked a little bit, and then when they came out and set up the spot, nobody was expecting it.
Right.
And that's why they got the great response, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, hey, guess what? Well, I mean, with the exception of with 3D guys.
Because that's part of their pop.
Yeah, with the exception. With the exception of the, you know.
Team 3D.
Yeah, there you go. Because it's called for with them,
mm-hmm.
right? But now there again, as long as nobody else is doing it, that's cool.
Right.
If everybody's doing it, then it's, you know.
So you think that it's too much with this this lockdown pay-per-view this weekend with all the matches being on six sides of the field?
It wouldn't be my concept, but they did it last year,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, yeah, it takes the edge off, I think. So then you got to come up with 16, well, or however many matches, you know, different matches to do in the cage,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's just and those all could be used over a longer period of time instead of all at once.
Right.
Yeah, it's I, you know, and again, I think it's, you know, you build anticipation for that last match is in the cage and that whole thing, and I think that's part of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead and run down the matches for lockdown. Let's play the pay-per-view prediction game.
Okay.
Let me get my trusty pen and paper out.
Get your trusty pen and paper out, Doc.
And now some of these matches are going to be announced on TNA Wrestling tonight. So we're not going to get to all of them. But we do have the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, versus a mystery opponent.
Okay. Well, I'll take Christopher Daniels. I don't know mystery opponent's track record. I don't know his one. Do you have any idea who this is going to be?
I have no clue.
Okay.
None. I haven't heard anything about it.
Well, see, then what kind of...
It's going to be
a reporter, are you?
It's going to be a real mystery.
Oh, okay. Well, don't tell me God's going to show up at TNA.
Who knows? Like, he'll get in the ring and lightning will just strike
him. Yeah, no, I would. Well, Mike, you can only
only say Daniels because we don't know who else we're talking about, right?
Right, but okay. I don't know. Last time there was a Mr. Opponent. The Mr. Opponent won. That was Sean Waltman.
Okay.
Was the last time. Well, but you're going to go with Daniels, and so am I, because Daniels, I think, needs a push here.
Okay.
We've got an arm wrestle.
Mr. Opponent is kind of like the guy, parts unknown.
Right.
Right. It's popular. He's been in a lot of matches. Go ahead.
Right. The arm wrestling challenge between Conan and Bullet Bob Armstrong.
Well, did they just do that?
No, this will be on the pay-per-view.
Oh, was it? But they did it live.
Where?
Where? On their show.
When?
I'm dreaming it. I saw it.
When?
Well, they did it, and then they tipped the table on that whole thing.
Oh. Well, I guess they're going to really do it now.
You didn't see it?
No, I missed that part.
They got to it where, you know, looked like Bob was going to beat Conan, and Conan wailed him, and off they went to the races.
So. Mm-hmm. No, I must have been in the bathroom or something and missed it.
Okay.
To be honest, I got a sandwich or something, but I didn't see that part.
Gosh, I don't, you know, I'm guessing this is, Bob's got to win the thing, but then they got to, Conan and them guys got to get their heat back, I think.
Yeah.
That would be a conventional thought, and so I don't know. But that would, you know, it's all right to show the heel up as long as the heel gets his heat on the back end.
Right.
You know, and so that would be my assertion of the whole situation.
Okay, I'm going to go with Conan.
Okay.
On this one. An X Division escape match. These are the hard ones because there's so many people in them. We've got Chris Sabin, Elix Skipper, Petey Williams, Chase Stevens, Shark Boy, and Puma. Yeah.
All right, run them by me one more time.
Chris Sabin.
Okay.
Elix Skipper.
Yes.
Petey Williams.
Yes.
Chase Stevens.
Okay.
Shark Boy and Puma.
I'd say either Williams or Sabin.
Yeah, I'd say I'm gonna say Skipper.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with
see
Skipper.
If I care. I mean, go ahead.
I'll put down.
I have to pick one or the other, right? I can't.
Right.
All right, I'll take Sabin.
Okay, I'll give you your Sabin, and I'll see you, Skipper.
All right, whatever works for you.
The World X Cup Tournament. It's a preview match. Team Japan's Black Tiger, Tanaka, and Goto versus Team USA's Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, and Alex Shelley.
Well, this is not the actual tournament, right?
No.
Okay, then I say the Japanese guys probably go over.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Team Japan, too, because it's a good build-up.
Well, that sets them up for them to put the other guys over during the tournament.
Mm-hmm. In an anthem match, it's Team 3D versus Team Canada.
And it's what kind of match?
An anthem match.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly. I think the winner gets their anthem sung.
Okay.
I think that's how it goes. Or the other team has to sing their anthem or something like that.
Somebody's singing anyway.
But it's a regular tag team match, basically.
Okay.
The anthem part.
Well, I think Team 3D is over.
Yeah, I'd like to see Team Canada start singing. I'm going to go with Team 3D.
Well, you know, if I have to pick between them and the Coasters, I think I'll take the Coasters. And for those of you who aren't old enough, the Coasters were a very strong rock and roll group in the 50s and early 60s. Thank you.
Yeah. I remember them.
Yes.
Now, I wasn't there live, but I heard them.
Heard that.
X Division title match, Samoa Joe, the champion, versus Sabu.
Joe.
Yes, definitely. Joe versus Sabu. I'm going to go with Joe also. He's the man. Lethal Lockdown match, Sting, AJ Styles, Rhino, and The Truth versus Jarrett, Steiner, and AMW. The cage will be covered, and there will be weapons hanging from the roof.
Now, see, to me, this would be a match where I would work angles off of to separate these guys into singles, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be, again, the conventional wisdom. I don't know what their direction is. You might say, well, it's Sting's first time. They got to win, but I'd say it's got to be past that. I don't know. I just really don't know. I think simply to set up something. I think the babyface is over. Sting's group.
You think Sting's group?
Yeah, I think so.
I am going to go against you, my friend.
That's okay.
I'm going to go with Jarrett's group.
You won't be the first, take my word.
I'm going to go with Jarrett's group. Because...
Just because I went the other way.
There's a lot of even Steven booking going around, and Sting hasn't lost yet.
Oh.
That's basically why.
Well, how many times has he wrestled? Twice?
Twice, I think. Two, three times.
Okay, well,
there's many different ways you can look at it, but
that's like being ahead in the home run race three games into the season. It's not really indicative of how the thing's going to end.
Well, he's only going to be there a year.
Well, I know. But at this rate, he's not going to have four matches in a year.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm thinking, too. They almost got to, you know. They can't pull the injury. Well, they can. They can pull any card they want out. But
right.
I wouldn't think you can't. Don't injure him and send him home for 2 more months. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get any rhythm out of him that way.
Right.
You know? And the Shelly cam and all that sort of stuff is good, but it's limited in terms of everything's limited in terms of longevity.
Right.
You know, and value in terms of longevity. He's almost got to wrestle again immediately, I would think.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, well, WWE's in a position, they've got enough depth, even though as shallow as their talent pool is in SmackDown now, and, you know, and they're bringing guys up, but they've still got enough depth that, they can mix and match. And TNA can't afford to... And they can work guys like Undertaker and some of those guys in limited schedules.
Mm.
But TNA doesn't have that luxury. You know, I mean, well, you know, they can do it, but you know, they need that those people more than just occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, if they're running, if they're running up and running good without that, and this guy comes in just every once in a while to help pop a number. I can see that too, but then they've got to be on a more solid footing and a high, you know. In other words, have a better head of steam than they have currently.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I'm thinking the baby, you know, Sting and his group. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
One more match, the NWA World Heavyweight Title match, Christian Cage versus the Monster Abyss.
Cage.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Cage, even though, man, I would love to see Abyss take that finally. You know.
Yeah.
He's been working there for years.
They can't be switching around too often. That's
right.
That's my reasoning again.
That's mine too.
You know. So.
All right, that's it.
That's it.
The pay-per-view is TNA's Lockdown.
Okay.
All the matches take place in the Six Sides of Steel.
Right. And then the next week WWE's, when's their next pay-per-view?
I believe it's next Sunday.
The following Sunday.
Right.
Okay. And that's when God puts in his prayer.
And that's when God's going to show up and shock the world.
We better quit talking this way.
I know.
I don't know. It's not me, God.
I'm. You know, Vince said it. I'm just promoting what Vince is promoting.
Well, you know, I understand. I understand. and it is such a, stud as you are and degenerate and so forth. I understand why you're concerned.
Yeah.
You can't afford to be too blasphemous.
Right.
At all.
Let's take a break, guys.
Okay.
When we come back, we're going to have Brother Devon from TNA here on Wrestling Weekly. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. Stick around. Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. On the line right now, our featured guest from TNA, Total Nonstop Action Wrestling, Brother Devon. Testify.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Cool, man.
Doing great.
Good.
Big pay-per-view coming up Sunday. We were just talking before we went back on the air. Show pulled a 1.1 last Thursday night. Good number to kick it off with. So you must be pretty excited about going into Sunday night.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was only a matter of time before TNA would actually show what we can do in the time slot that we were in. The numbers probably would have drawn even more if we would have been in that 9 o'clock hour, but that's okay. We will take that and we will grow from there. You know, we definitely have proven that the fans that watch the UFC also watch TNA wrestling as well. And, you know, like I said, everybody is happy about the numbers because of the fact that we're proving that we're not some fly-by indie promotion that's trying to make it or trying to compete with Vince. We are the real deal. We're here to stay.
Well said.
All right, wave the flag, Doc. Hey,
I'm just, he just got me, like, captivated right now with this.
And little brother's back, Matt Spike, or as what do you call him, Runt. Now, right?
The Runt, you know, we've been calling him the Runt of the Litter ever since he was with us back in ECW, so what fitting way to do it in TNA, you know? But we're just happy and glad that Spike is back with us, and, you know, I think he'd be a hell of a hand in TNA, especially in that X division. If anybody can take an ass-kicking, as we all know, it's definitely Spike. And, I mean, whether it's from the hands of us beating the hell out of him, or Mike Awesome, or Masato Tanaka, the list goes on and on. Spike is one tough SOB, and as far as I'm concerned, pound for pound, the toughest man in this business today. I think he's proven that over the years, and he's definitely going to be proving that a lot more here in TNA.
Now, this isn't going to affect your match on the pay-per-view. It's still going to be Team 3D versus Team Canada. Is Runt going to be in your corner?
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely looking for Runt to actually be in there with us. I'm hoping that maybe he'd say, you know, the hell with it and get in that cage and help beat the hell out of Team Canada with us.
Excellent.
As far as I'm concerned, there's going to be a lot of ass whooping that night. They got a huge receipt, as they say in the wrestling business, coming to them. And, you know, after what they've been doing to us in the past couple of weeks and jumping us from behind and leaving us laying last week, we proved that the old Dudley boys, I'm going to say Dudleys because we are doing an interview, so if they want to sue me, sue me. you know, we've proven that we've got some tricks under our sleeves as well, and we'll pull them out. You know, when we feel we have to, and Spike was just definitely one that we had to pull out at the right time, and what appropriate time to pick it on Thursday night, premiering on Spike TV.
Yeah, I'm curious to know if you guys hang out, like after the show, you and Bubba and Runt, you guys go get a beer or what?
Absolutely not. Yeah, I see them more than I see my family, man. I don't need to see them, though, even after the match. It got to the point, man, when me and Bubba used to room together. I said, look, I done seen you too much. You need to get your own room, and that's it. But, no, I mean, we're very good friends outside of the business. And, you know, we watch each other's back, and, you know, we do what we have to do. I think that's why we've been so successful, you know. You know, when you say Team 3D or the Dudleys, you can't help but not mention Spike as well in that mix, because we definitely made it to where, out of all of the Dudleys that's been associated with this, we are the only three that's ever stuck out and actually made it happen in this business.
You know, you guys are probably on that UW, the DCW arena, right? TNA Hardcore.
Yes.
All right. Talk about the atmosphere in that building. Back in the old ECW, that was a hell of a portion of the game right there, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can't begin to tell you the feeling, the adrenaline rush that we had, you know, going into each and every one of those fights that night in the ECW arena. I mean, the crowd was bloodthirsty. We all knew that it was a cult following, but I mean, they just made it happen. And each and every night we gave 110%, and those fans ate it up and loved it. Regardless of how hurt we were, regardless to what we've done, you know, to mutilate ourselves, we've always had the energy to go out there and to do what we have to do to make sure that we give those fans 110% in whatever we do.
How did you come up with the Reverend Devon gimmick?
Well, you know, it was actually Vince's idea. What he did was, he actually, I guess this was at the time when, a lot of stuff was going on with the Catholic Church, with the priests and things like that, where they were, becoming exposed,
right,
so to speak. And, you know, then you had TV evangelists being exposed as well in terms of, you know, taking money and, you know, living the life of luxury and this and that, but yet, you know, not really doing their job and preaching the word. And, I, you know, Vince had the idea of you know, taking a character like the Reverend Devon character and bringing it to the forefront. The thing was, you know, it worked. It started working really, really well. And it was definitely going on the right track. I mean, I couldn't believe it when they said I was going to ask for donations after a sermon. I said, there's no way in hell people are going to put money in this basket. And they said, you deliver it correctly, they will. And sure enough, you know, as God is my witness, the minute I was done, I got out the ring and I asked for a donation, and people started throwing money in the basket.
Did you keep it?
Well, I'm going to put it to you this way. It went towards the Devon's building fund. Al Snow loves to say, he goes, well, you know, I've yet to see a doorknob on that building fund, yet I've yet to see a building. I said, well, you know, it's a slow process.
The first wrestler to work for tips in the history of the business.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, like I said, it was going great, and I remember that we would do, me and Vince would do vignettes in the back, and we would do it in one take. And I remember Vince telling me a couple of times, he'd say, did I start to tell him what I was going to say? And he's like, no. He wanted to feed off of what I was giving him. And I thought that was great because, again, you know, we were doing it in one take, and he was loving it, I was loving it, and Bruce Pritchard was behind the whole thing. You know, he would tell me what Vince wanted and ask me to come up with the scriptures to do it, because being that my background is very familiar with the religion in terms of my father was a bishop and my mother's a reverend, I pretty much handled that, you know, the best way I knew how. Whenever I got stumped, you know, I would ask the parents, you know, what scripture would go best for this? And they would tell me. And then it just, I don't know what happened. I think Paul Heyman had gotten the booking for SmackDown and started writing. And, you know, Paul is a genius. I'll never take anything away from Paulie, and he may disagree with what I'm about to say, you know, but it, in my opinion, and I truly believe this, that when Paul came aboard, I think that was when the gimmick went sour. Just for the simple fact of the matter is that, you know, Paul likes to take characters and push them over the edge, you know, push the envelope, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And with that type of character, you really couldn't do it. And I tried to explain that to him. And, you know, he just said, no, Vince wants it this way. And I would go to talk to Vince, and Vince goes, you know, Devon, you do it the best way you think it's possible, you know, that you think it'll get over. And I said, okay, fine. And then, you know, me and Paulie would not argue or anything, but kind of butt heads a little bit. I mean, he would write me a script, you know, a two-page script, so to speak. He wanted me to memorize it and go out there and do it. And I told him, I said, this is not the type of character that reads from a script. I don't know any Baptist preacher that reads from a script. They have bullet points, but they don't read word for word.
Right.
And, you know, he wouldn't listen. And on top of that, there were words on that sheet, brother, I couldn't pronounce, let alone spell. You know, I mean, that just shows you how, you know, how clever and a genius Paulie is. And I think that was what sent it over the edge, because it didn't work for me. I couldn't connect with the gimmick anymore, and it failed, mm-hmm. you know. But I definitely feel that when me and Bubba are done, you know, tagging and doing everything there is possible to do as a tag team, I definitely want another shot at that singles career, because I definitely feel I have enough in me to go forth and be, if not, you know, a little successful, a lot successful.
Yeah. Did your parents approve, or were they offended by the Reverend Devon gimmick?
Well, my mother had a little bit of a problem with it, but my dad did. My dad, like I said, he was a bishop, and, you know, he basically, I was a little nervous, and I was nervous to the fact where if my dad didn't approve of it, not that I didn't care what my mother thought, but, you know, the head of the household was my dad, you know, and he was the main guy, and bottom line is, if he would have told me no, you know, don't do that gimmick because it's offensive or blasphemy or what have you, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Unfortunately, I would have had to go to Vince and say, listen, I can't do it. If it means my job, then so be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain things I'm not willing to sacrifice, you know, to be in the world of wrestling entertainment, and that was one of them. You know, my father raised me, and he was a good man, and, you know, he put those morals in me. And it just so happened that my father told me, he said, you know, son, I don't see anything wrong with what you're doing, but I will tell you this. When you're done hooping and hollering in that ring, you better go where it really counts, and that's in the pool pit. And when he said that, I said, okay, Dad, you got it. So, Reverend Devon may surface again, but in the true life, outside of the ring.
Right. So, Normster in the chat room wants to know if you could please cut a Reverend Devon promo off the cuff.
Oh, boy, yeah, sure.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
You know, my brother, you know, I sit there and I look at you and I see that you are lost. And the bottom line is I can help you. I can bring forth what you've been missing. So the bottom line is this. You give me a day, that day, you give me a dollar today, and I can guarantee you salvation is just right around the corner. Because you see, that dollar turns into $2, and that $2 turns into $3, so forth and so on. You understand what I'm saying. So remember, a dollar is a terrible thing to waste. And if my brother, if you can understand what I'm saying, then give me an old testify.
Awesome. Are you looking for TNA to give you more mic time?
Not really. I mean, you know, my character is based on the Mr. T character, and it was a little bit of a Samuel L. Jackson when I first came in, with a combination of both. But, you know, my character is based along, like, Mr. T from Rocky III. And I don't mind talking. I don't mind. But a lot of times I just want to concentrate more on the wrestling ordeal instead of the talking. And I know the talking is a big thing, you know, in professional wrestling and this and that. When I feel the need to have to talk, I talk, mm-hmm. you know, but when I don't feel the need to, I won't. You know, I did a lot of it in ECW, and then I just toned it down and then, you know, picked it up again in WWE. And then, you know, it was at a point where we didn't get mic time at all, you know.
Right.
And during the Reverend Devon gimmick, I was talking all the time and really felt really comfortable with it. But then it just got to the point where I just wanted to concentrate more on the entertainment in terms of the wrestling inside the ring, telling a story and this and that. And, you know, not that I'm, you know, again, gun-shy from doing it. I will, you know, eventually I'd probably get back into it. But right now, you know, I kind of doubted myself in a sense when I had been off for so long during the vacation with the WWE. I doubted myself if I still had it or not. So right now I'm just trying to fight it within myself to see, you know, hey, I'm trying to prove to myself that I still have what it takes to get in there and to do, you know, what I can do. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what I'm concentrating on now. So I will definitely wouldn't mind talking a little bit more. But as of right now, it's not my main concern.
Now, you had said before that both of your parents were very religious. I mean, they had jobs in the business and things like that. So as a child, did you get in a lot of trouble as a child, or were you, you know, a good guy?
I was actually a good guy. I was scared to death of my parents.
Yeah.
I didn't even say Dawn around the house. You know, most preachers' kids basically buck wild, you know, they run rampant, you know, run amok, but I didn't, you know. I basically, I did exactly what they told me to do, and my grandmother was the fist of the family, and she was she really helped raise me, you know, because my parents were out there, you know, preaching the word and this and that, so my grandmother pretty much was home raising me, and she was that fist that kept everybody in line, including my parents, and, you know, you didn't talk back to grandma. You know, I'm pretty much sure a lot of you guys got those old school, grandmothers and moms and dads that, you know, if you got out of line, they'd make sure that you didn't get out of line again. And that was the way my grandmother was. God rest her soul. I love her to death, because if it wasn't for her, you know, I wouldn't be the type of person that I am today.
Rhode Island Red in the chat room, he says, Devon, I met you in Providence, Rhode Island a couple years ago outside Dunkin' Donuts, and you're a great guy. He said,
Wait a minute, Dunkin' Donuts, I wasn't eating them, was I?
I don't know. Why aren't you training secrets out there?
Yeah, he said outside, but he said, I just wanted to thank you for taking a picture with me. Can you please respond to the rumors that there's been heat with you and Jim Cornette?
No, you know, everybody, I thought this was a dead issue. No, there is no heat. You know, there was a thing where we were down in OVW, and there was something that was done in the ring that he didn't like. And, you know, he told somebody about it, and we got wind of it, and we came to him. We talked about it. There was no hooping. There was no hollering. You know, we talked about it like gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody got upset. Nobody, you know, did anything wrong. I love Jim. You know, I love the fact that he's old school. I love the fact that he, you know, knows what it takes, you know, to get that crowd going, you know, and he opened us with open arms when we were down in OVW. So there's no heat. we're still trying to figure out where all of this came from. You know, it's just one of those internet bad rumors that got out and spread like wildfire.
Yeah.
You know, so no, there is no heat between us and Jim Cornette. And again, the last time we saw him was, I believe, the last Six Flags show that they had down there in OVW. And again, the man just kept saying how much he loved me, and he was like, "Man, D-Line, you guys are gonna, you guys are gonna be great." So I've got nothing bad to say about Jim Cornette. You know, Jim Cornette's the man, in my opinion.
Myshak says, "What if any tag teams influenced you growing up, and who were your favorites?"
First and foremost, the Road Warriors. What they did during that era was just unbelievable. The fear that they put in the other guys' eyes, you know, it was just, it was unreal. And then the way they captivated an audience, you know, it was almost like when Hogan would go out there and do his thing back in the early 80s. That's what they were, the tag team wrestling. Just their presence alone, you know, you knew, wait, let me put it this way. When that music hit and you saw those shoulder pads come out, you knew somebody was about to go down and go down hard.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the one great thing I loved about the Road Warriors. They had that intimidating look. They had that intimidating presence. And, I mean, they whooped your behind in that ring. Anybody who was in there with them will tell you, believe me, if you thought it was fake, you had needed to get in the ring with the Road Warriors. Because they would have proved to you that professional wrestling is not fake, not by any means. The Road Warriors was definitely number one. The British Bulldogs, I loved the Bulldogs. I loved watching them, especially their feuds with the Hart Foundation. I thought that was tremendous. Of course, Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas, you know, I loved those. I loved those two when they were teaming together. The Samoans, you know, Afa and Sika.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you love to hate them. And, hell, I mean, even though I know they weren't a tag team and they were both singles wrestlers, but every once in a while they would tag up, was Piper and Cowboy Ace, Bob Orton. You know, you just said Piper back then was the man you loved to hate, and at the same time, Ace was a technician, but yet, you know, you always wanted somebody to take that cast and wrap it around that turnbuckle. So even though they weren't true tag team, you know, wrestlers, and they were single, but every once in a while when they did get in there, it was magic as well. So, you know, D-Von had a lot of influences.
Professor VNS says, if you couldn't team with Bubba, who would you want to team up with?
Oh, man. If I couldn't team with Bubba, who would I want to team with? I'm going to say, I'm going to say Maven.
Really?
I'm tough enough. Yeah, me and Maven are very, very good friends. We're very tight. We're very close. And, you know, I took Maven under my wing when he first came in. You know, at first I had a little resentment towards him because of the fact the way he came from in terms of tough enough. And we tell the story all the time to people. And one day we were in the bar and I said, "Okay, what's your drink of choice?" And he goes, "Jack Daniels and Coke." I go, "All right, good man." And, you know, from that point on, you know, we had been, we've been good. We had been good to go. So it's definitely one. And I'm probably going to get some laughter behind this one. But, you know, I was very jealous and envious of Edge and Christian because of the fact that they got the team with my biggest idol, and that's Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
I would have loved Hogan. And I tell Hogan all the time, you know, how upset I was when him and Edge won the tag team belts together. Because I remember looking at Edge and going, "That should be me." that should have been me with Hogan. You know, because I'm a huge, huge Hogan fan. What do you want to call it, fan or mark? You know, if it wasn't for Hogan, I don't think I would have been as captivated in this business as I was to want to do it. You know, I was definitely a Hulkamaniac, and, you know, to this day, I still am. I'm on my treadmill, and I'm watching the DVD that WWE put out, you know, Hulk Still Rules.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I watch that all the time. I got nothing but footage of him on DVDs that I watch, and you know, a lot of the moves that I do and this and that, even my selling as a babyface kind of resembles Hogan with the shaking of the leg and, you know, all of that. I mean, it's something that, you know, I incorporate my style along with Hogan's style. Every time I do the leg drop in the ring, that's just a tribute to Hogan to tell him how much I appreciate what he's done.
Oh, that's a cool
and
story.
And taking your vitamins and saying your prayers, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, brother, let me tell you something. I'm hanging at the big city gym, brother. I'm sitting up there doing what I got to do to become a true Hulkamaniac.
Now, you put on some size, but I mean, you put on some muscle size, too. You feel better now, or you feel like you've got more energy to go longer distance in the ring, or what?
Oh, absolutely. I think the blades would actually slow me down, and it didn't. You know, I feel great. I've got a personal trainer at the gym that I work out at in Melbourne, Florida, which is called Hawks Gym. And the guy who's training me down there, he is just a phenomenal trainer. He's an ex-bodybuilder himself. And, you know, for a lot of years, I thought I was doing a lot of things right, and apparently I wasn't doing it right. And, you know, now he's showing me the way and how to do things the right way. So, you know, it's really, really helping me out. It's making me a lot stronger in the ring, where I'm starting to pick up guys with no problem and toss them around the ring. You know, I'm enjoying that a lot. So, I'm enjoying this, the weight that I'm at now. I'm 265. This is the biggest I think I've ever been. And, you know, I'm basically trying to jump the Brock Lesnar.
All right.
I love you, Brock.
You know, the one thing I think a lot of the indie kids don't understand, you know, they'll say, well, you want me to lift and stuff for the cosmetic thing. No, because you're less, you know, it holds the injury frequency down, and it helps you recover a lot quicker if you're in the better shape you're in, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't begin to tell you. I mean, again, I wasn't in ECW. I mean, of course, it was a rugged and tough style, but, you know, and you were bound to get hurt. But I remember, you know, a lot of times because I wasn't training, I was getting hurt all the time. Once I started training and doing the right thing, it was less room for injuries to occur. And, you know, that's definitely a testament to that because of the fact that, you know, the less injuries you have, the better you have to perform for the people and give them their money's worth.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Heel 2006 has a question. He says, have you ever talked to Christian about coming into TNA?
Have I ever talked? I'm sorry, say that again?
Have you ever talked to Christian about coming into TNA?
No, never talked to him.
I'm sorry, not Christian, Jericho.
Oh, have I ever talked to Jericho?
Yes.
No, actually, I called Jericho and the creep hasn't called me back yet. So, because I didn't have Jericho's number for a while because he had changed it, and I gave him a buzz and I hadn't spoke to him yet, but I'd love to see him come to TNA. I think he'd be a tremendous asset to the team, and he would definitely help get this company on the rise even further than what we are. So I think I would definitely love to see Jericho come in and shine in TNA.
WrestleFan says, what was more of a surprise to you, Edge winning the world title in WWE or Batista winning it?
Edge winning it because
definitely.
Of the fact that I did not think that they would have done that. I think Edge is a tremendous wrestler. I think he's a hell of a hand. But, you know, there are a lot of guys in that company or were in that company that deserved to have a tremendous push and never got it. You know, for one reason or another, I don't know. And, you know, I didn't think they would actually do it with Edge. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad they did it because I think Edge is having a hell of a time right now going out there. And I think he's just having a blast, and I'm loving it. I'm loving to see guys like Edge, especially from the group, you know, the Hardys, Christian, and Edge. I'm glad to see he has shined and actually, you know, prevailed over all of the crap that goes on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just very happy about it. I mean, you know, there's so many guys in that company that are underrated, and the one that stands out in particular, there's two actually, Val Venus. For some strange reason, I don't know why, he's never gotten the proper push that he deserves. I mean, when he was doing the Chief Molly, brother had more heat than anybody in that company at that time.
You know what, Devon? When he was with me in my company for several months, I was him and Jamie Noble just tore the house down one night, and just a good solid mat based match, right? Good psychology and everything. And Sean is just so versatile, and I'm like you. It's like, why aren't you doing something with this guy?
Yeah, and I mean, the man has proven to you during the Chief Morley Bischoff administration that he can handle the ball. The man can talk. The man can wrestle his ass off.
Yeah.
You know, the man can do everything that you want in a superstar to help carry and push him. I'm dumbfounded by it. Another one is, believe it or not, and I don't know, there may be some people that may disagree with me, but Stevie Richards. Not saying that he can hold the heavyweight title, but I think he definitely deserves to be in the spotlight because he's a hell of a hand.
Yeah,
I mean, with some of the stuff that he says in the back in terms of ideas and angles, I mean, it's just tremendous. I mean, he was a hell of a hand in ECW. He was one of the cornerstones that helped ECW to rise, you know, with the BWO and him with Raven, you know, and the whole nine. And he's definitely someone that has not been used in the right way, you know, and it's just a shame.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree with you.
Build a territory out of the guys who haven't been used in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, and the messed up part about it is you got guys, and I don't want to name any names. I'm not going to do that. But you have guys that are in the spot that they're in don't deserve to be in that spot, you know, because unfortunately they're not ready.
Yeah,
and they're being exposed. And then you wonder why, you know, that this person is not getting over, you know, the way they are because they tried to hide their flaws, but yet, little by little, it's being exposed.
Right.
Yoshi wants to know, what are some of your worst injuries?
I'm going to say the toe and pec muscle. It was during the ECW time, and we were supposed to do a with Onita from FMW. He was flying in from Japan. And the night before, Sandman took a ladder, a wooden ladder, not a metal one, a wooden ladder. And, you know, if anybody knows Sandman, he's drunk before he gets in the ring. And stupid me decided to lay there and let this man put a wooden ladder on me. And he did one of those flips over the top rope onto that ladder. And my arm wasn't there to protect myself and basically just crushed my chest, which tore the pec muscle.
Ooh. And they say that's the worst kind of pain, too.
Oh, let me put it to you this way. You have no idea. When you lay down to go to sleep, your body's relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
But don't realize that your pec muscle, your chest, is actually contracting. You know, it's actually pulling. And you feel relaxed. You don't feel it, but it's actually doing that. And I didn't realize that. When you sit up, it's basically relaxed, but when you lay down, it basically it's pulling, and I didn't know that. And Lord, I had to sleep up many a night.
I believe it.
Yeah, it wasn't a good thing, brother.
Well, one last thing, Devon, and you don't have to do this, but Shockage wants to know if you'll lead us all in a song of praise.
No, because you can't pass the basket, right?
you want me to lead a song of praise?
Yes, lead us out.
Oh, man, glory, glory, hallelujah. Since I laid my burdens down, I'm in TNA, and I am happy. Since I left Vince, oh, what a day.
I wish I had a tambourine to get into this here.
That's excellent. Devon, I want to thank you for being such a great guest.
Thank you, guys.
Good luck at the pay-per-view. Everybody check it out. It's TNA's Lockdown this Sunday, April 23rd.
Hey, man, always a pleasure. Take care. God bless, brother.
Thank you, guys.
Devon Dudley here. I call him Devon Dudley again. Brother Devon here on Wrestling Weekly. It's such a habit.
The next time you do that, a band of lawyers will swoop down upon you and wreak havoc on your body.
Well, we got to be getting out of here, guys.
Yep.
Don't forget, starting Tuesday, we are going to be on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock. So we're going to
send me emails every day leading up to that, will you, so I remember?
I will, Les.
Okay.
We'll see you guys on Tuesday. We've got part two with Chris Canyon. He had a great interview with us last week, and we had just started to scratch the surface, and we ran out of time. But we're going to get to your questions for Canyon and all that good stuff, plus a mystery guest, a big mystery guest.
The same guy that Chris Daniels is wrestling on.
Exactly. No, I hope not. I hope it's not the same guy.
Okay.
All right, we'll see you guys. Keep checking WrestlingWeekly.com. Don't forget ObsessedWithWrestling.com. Check it out. It's a great website. It's got all the information that you need about wrestling over at ObsessedWithWrestling.com. We'll see you guys on Tuesday at 8 o'clock. So keep checking out www.wrestlingweekly.com. Les,
It's time to say goodnight.
Well, okay, and see you next Tuesday.
See you Tuesday, guys.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us next Thursday from 8 to 10 Eastern here on www.wrestlingweekly.com.